This is The Exchange. I'm your host, Stephanie Joyce. There's no doubt about it. The Arctic is changing rapidly. Just a few years ago, scientists were saying it would take until the end of the century before the pole was ice-free in summertime. Now, some experts are saying that eventuality is just a few decades off, if that. The rapid disappearance of the Arctic sea ice has profound consequences for Alaska and the rest of the far north, especially when it comes to development. This summer is already set to be one of the busiest in Alaskan Arctic history, with Shell Oil expected to drill in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas and increased shipping traffic transiting the northern sea route. Is Alaska ready for development in the Arctic? What kind of policies do we have in place to ensure that the people of the state benefit? Institute of the North Director Nils Andreasen was in on Alaska last week, and I sat down with him to talk about some of these issues. Here's what he had to say. Maybe you can explain, to start with, a little bit about what the Institute of the North does.
Sure. So the Institute of the North was founded by Governor Hickel in 1994 to really understand the reality, richness, and responsibility of the North. And what that means to us today is that we connect Alaskans to each other and to peoples and communities of the circumpolar North, that we engage them in the issues that are facing many northern regions, and work to educate everyone, I think, about what Arctic issues look like and how people can be involved.
And what are some of the major Arctic issues that you're focusing on at the moment?
Yeah, so I think we split it out into some policy focus and some infrastructure. And a lot of our history has been in working with the Arctic Council on infrastructure, on aviation, telecommunications, energy, marine shipping issues. And so one of the projects that we'll be working on soon is a port and airport assessment in the north. So to assess the response capacity at ports and airports in the 8 Arctic nations, with the recently signed search and rescue agreement that the Arctic Council had done, and now with the oil spill task force negotiations going on, it's more important than ever that we understand what infrastructure, what hard infrastructure is in place in the north. And at the same time, understanding how northern nations approach the Arctic is important. And so from a policy side of things, the Institute works to not necessarily advocate, but to reach out and inform Alaskans about what their role is as an Arctic state and what the U.S. role is as an Arctic nation.
And how do you think the U.S. and Alaska compare to other Arctic nations in terms of their infrastructure in the far north and in terms of their preparedness for the development that's going to be happening there in the near future?
Yeah, I would say that it's a common challenge is probably the short and sweet answer. A lot of nations don't have what's needed in the north. I would say that the Scandinavian north is more prepared, but and Iceland certainly. But if you look at Greenland, if you look at Canada and Russia, everybody's playing a catch-up game be able to respond to increasing activity. And I think it's the increasing activity, whether it's resource development or just transport routes, that everybody's focused on right now. So it's not that they haven't been prepared, they just haven't had a reason to be. And now it's just a matter of understanding what's there and what should be.
And so I know Alaskan politicians have been focusing a lot on some of these issues. Can you tell me a little bit about how those efforts relate to the Arctic Council's work?
Yeah, it's been fantastic to see the level of interest among Alaska's policymakers in looking at the North and addressing Arctic issues. And I guess that the legislature had formed the Northern Waters Task Force 18 months ago, roughly, and the results of that work pointed to supporting ratification of Law of the Sea, supported research collaboration, and engaging with the Arctic Council. And I think that we saw a bill recently to move that work into an Arctic Policy Commission that would have Alaska have a say in what its Arctic policy really should look like. And once we have that understanding of what as a state is important to us in the North, that gives us a place to engage with the U.S. in informing their Arctic policy, but also gives us a lot of leverage in these international forums for addressing subnational interests.
So what do you think is sort of the most important development thus far has been in furthering the U.S.'s Arctic goals?
Yeah, it's that's tough. I think that certainly the media has brought a lot of attention to Arctic issues. We saw fuel delivery to Nome with the Renda, and global attention being paid to where Alaska's at. At the same time that we're looking at offshore development on Alaska's North Slope, with Shell moving an incredible amount of resources up there. I think they've got a submarine, is what I heard. They've got all kinds of infrastructure. They have more. Shell's got more infrastructure in the North than the federal government does, and like that should worry Alaskans, or not worry Alaskans, but Alaskans should know about those things. Northern Sea Route traffic has increased by 13 times in the last year. Alaskans should know about that.
And maybe just to interrupt for a second, sure. You can explain a little bit about what the Northern Sea Route is, because I understand that a lot of attention has been paid to that over the last few years, and that even more attention is expected to be paid to that this summer with increased shipping traffic.
Yeah. So a lot of times I think people conflate Arctic issues with climate change, and I think it's not helpful. And really what we're looking at in the Arctic is understanding that, yes, change happens, but that there's increasing activity. A lot of that activity, we're not sending ships over the pole and the Northwest Passage over Canada isn't widely used. But the attention's been on the Northern Sea Route, that from over the top of Russia. And what you see is that open, that body of water open and almost ice-free for 4 months of the year, which is a fairly short shipping season. So it's not a game-changer year-round. But when you look at a time savings of between 8 and 22 days by using this passage, people are paying attention. And so we've had interest from Norwegian shipping companies, from Russian shipping companies, who are increasingly using it to get goods to market. A lot of that gas condensate to market in Asia, they're looking at what resources can we bring back through, and have been having conversations about stopping over in Alaska and finding out what Alaskans have to offer. And actually, both Norway and Russia are interested in coming to Unalaska and meeting with people here, and it's on their map.
I did not realize that. That's very interesting. I know there has been talk about developing further resources here in Unalaska for dealing with increased shipping, but I didn't realize we were quite that far along in the process.
Well, I think that they're mapping things out. A lot of people haven't been here before and don't really know what Alaska has to offer. But it was interesting, just in conversations with two very separate entities. We want to go see Red Dog and we want to see Dutch Harbor. And I think that's fascinating.
And I know that one of the goals of the Institute of the North is to make sure that the people who actually live in the region are benefiting from the resource extraction and from the increased activity in the area. Can you tell me a little bit about where the U.S. stands in relation to other nations in terms of protections for local individuals and making sure that they are part of the process?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one of the fundamental driving forces of the Institute of the North that development of the resources should benefit the people. And I don't know that anybody does it well, really. or as directly as people would like to see. But I think that what we've seen over the last few years is a global narrative changing, responding to local interest, traditional knowledge, say, and indigenous interests. And I think that the governments more and more often are responsive to what people are saying on the ground nearest the resource. That with that increased activity comes increased attention, and you know, I think increased worry about what impact that's going to have.
And so where does Alaska stand, for example, in terms of that relative to, say, Canada, where I know a lot of attention has been paid to this issue?
Yeah. I mean, the two systems are very different. I think that Alaska does a good job through its public process of engaging local communities. I know that, for instance, this whole idea of the Bering Strait traffic that the Coast Guard has been looking at, their port access route study, they made phenomenal they went around the state and engaged with local communities in ways that they have never done before. And so they made it a priority that they would engage with local people and learn as much as they could about these things. I think Canada has a different process. A lot of it's upfront in consultation with First Nations. And I think that you see that that it's more formalized maybe in other countries, that's the first step, and then you go from there. And maybe you don't have that same structure in Alaska, but I think Alaska does a good job of engaging people and trying to represent community interests.
And speaking of resources and how those are divided among nations, where is the U.S. in the process of getting the Law of the Sea Treaty ratified, which I understand would give us the ability to negotiate with other nations over our territorial boundaries?
Yeah, puts us at the table. Right now it's up to the Senate. There are key Senate leaders who don't want to see it happen. There are some who do. I guess what I've heard is that there's a hope that it will get passed here or brought to the floor in the next few months, that the U.S. Should be ratifying this. And that's certainly what we've heard from Alaska leaders. And resolutions have been sent to the President and Congress to approve, to ratify it. And in conversations globally, I mean, I can go to Norway or Iceland or Canada, and it comes up. And our neighbors are saying, why aren't you part of this? Because it's incredibly important for Alaska and the U.S. to be at the table. And
without that treaty, we aren't able to participate in some of these international discussions about boundaries and resource extraction.
Right. Yeah. It needs to happen, I think. But we also need to understand and be able to address the challenges from the other side. And I think that together we're getting there towards understanding. It's hard being an Arctic nation when there's only one state that's Arctic. And so educating more Americans about why it's important to the U.S. and to Alaska needs to happen.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Nils Andreasen, director of the Institute of the North. You're listening to The Exchange. Stay with us.